And one time, I have some slides of this. Can you show these slides? Well,
can we have those lights dim, please?
See, this is, I just like this is to point out some of the intelligence and modern interrogation methods used by a modern and sophisticated war machine. This is just to give you an idea of how we go into a village and get information on enemy movements and things like this. This is our special forces. Okay, this isn't really, you can't see it too well, but just that big guy there, point him out, Jack. He's a special forces officer, or I'm sorry, probably an enlisted man. He was a sergeant. And what we do is we go into the village and first of all ask people who they think are Viet Cong. Can you show the next picture? So we were given two people that we were told were Viet Cong. See, what we do is we took these two guys out to the field, and we strung one of them up in a tree by his arms, tied his hands behind him, and then hung him in a tree. Can you point him out? Can he be seen there? Okay. Okay, go to the next two. The next one, skip the next one and go to the last one. Okay, put your head back there. Okay, there you can clearly see the prisoner there being strung up into the tree. And point out that special forces man on the far side of the picture, the big guy. Up. Yeah, that's him right there. That's a special forces man. He's just running the whole show. And this is all under their command and everything, and it's not the Vietnamese. Now, what we did to this man when we strung him up is that he was stripped of all his clothes, and then they tied a string around his testicles. And a man backed up about 10 feet and told him what would happen if he didn't answer any questions the way they saw fit. Now, all we had to go by, that we were told that he was a suspect by other villagers. Now, the other villagers weren't going to point out themselves, so somebody had to be pointed out. So they'd ask a guy a question, maybe, well, do you know of any enemy units in this area? And if he said no, the guy that was holding that string would just yank on it as hard as he could for about 10 times, and this guy just be flying all over the place in pain. And this is what they use just to get, I mean, anybody's going to say anything in a situation like this to get answers out of them. And then when they were done, when the guy was just limp and hanging there, the South Vietnamese indigenous troops working with the special forces went up there and then, you know, to get their kicks would run their knife through his ear or just, you know, carve little superficial scars and wounds on his body. Not deep ones, but just, you know, trickle it down his body, you know, as if to make fun of the guy. We took a guy to the other end of the village, and well, we didn't do this. All we did was burn his penis with a cigarette to get answers out of him. And if, well, I'm sure people understand what that would be like, especially if it was to yourself or to your children. This is, like I said, this is just one of the things I saw. I could go on all day, all of us could, and every GI in this room could say the same thing. But it's not just us. Everybody knows this. It isn't just Lieutenant Callie. I was involved, and I know there's so many other people involved in all of this American policy in Vietnam. That's all I have to say.
All right. I might state that that Kenneth Ruth is a police officer. No, I won't say where. And has a master's degree in, or working on his master's degree in education. National relations. All right, the last.
Are going to be testifying about weapons. And I would like to take this time to introduce myself and the members who are going to give testimony. My name is David Brom, and for military purposes, my serial number was RA13766564. Pentagon has a record of it, and paper can check it out. In Vietnam, in 1963 and 1964, I was a helicopter crew chief with the 119th Aviation Battalion, assigned to the 52nd Combat Aviation Battalion, headquartered at Pleiku and operating out of two corps. I went there under the advisor myth during the administration of John F. Kennedy and later Lyndon Johnson. And I worked in I Corps, II Corps, and the Delta. So I've seen a fairly good section of Vietnam. My qualifications to be the moderator this afternoon for the weapons panel are that in civilian life, I was for 5 years purchasing all materials and supplies related to the Apollo missions. I purchased materials and supplies for the United States Air Force, the U.S. Navy, the Atomic Energy Commission, the Army, and the CIA. And I worked for Columbia University's Government Contract Purchasing Division. The members of the panel this afternoon are Dr. Pfeiffer, whose subject will be defoliation in Vietnam, Mr. Art Kanagas, who will discuss automated battlefield equipment and anti-personnel weapons, Mr. Doug Hostetter, who will document actual effects of chemical and biological warfare programs on people, animals, and crops in the Southeast Asian area, Mr. Richard Ward, who will show you the results of bombing in North Vietnam and Laos, Mr. Bill Forrester, former First Lieutenant with the American Marine, 11th Marine Division. He was an artillery officer, and he will be here to provide testimony relevant to Art Kanagas' material on battlefield electronic equipment. I would like to make an opening statement, and I quote, "Every violation of the law of war is a war crime. As published in the United States Army Field Manual 27-10, the Law of Land Warfare, page 178. We are going to be able to, if you need it, to document the applicable laws under the Geneva Conventions, various treaties, should these questions arise later. I would like to begin by having Dr. Bert Pfeiffer introduce himself and give you his qualifications to discuss the subject of defoliation. Dr. Pfeiffer?
I don't think this is on.
Yes, it is on.
It's on now. Thank you very much, Dave. I want to say that it's a real honor for me to have been invited by this outstanding group of Vietnam War veterans to participate in this very important meeting. First, I'd like to say I am a biologist. I'm Professor
Dr. Pfeiffer, excuse me a moment, please. Have an announcement. Would you please keep the aisles open? The fire department is here. Smokey the Bear is upon us.
As I said, I am a biologist, a professor of zoology at the University of Montana, having taken my degree in biology at the University of California at Berkeley some years ago. With respect to the thing that I want to talk about, which is the chemical war in Vietnam, with a particular reference to anti-plant chemicals, I would say that I, like many of my colleagues, have been greatly concerned about this massive use of these chemicals. They've never before been used in for military purposes, and we have been very concerned about what the short and long-term effects were. Our concern, which dates way back to when they were first being used, has been thoroughly confirmed by the evidence that I'm going to present and some others will. My concern has led me to Indochina on three different trips. In 69, I went sponsored by a group of scientists, social scientists for social responsibility. We spent about 2 weeks mostly with the DOD people, with the Air Force. I flew with the 12th Air Commando Squadron on a couple of defoliating raids. We made one raid up into the Plain of Reeds, a heavy suppression mission. We can get into that a little bit more later on. My second trip, I was fortunate enough to be the guest of the royal government of Prince Sihanouk, the man who I still consider to be the legal ruler of Cambodia. We were in his country as his official guests just about a year ago, 13 months ago. to inspect the damage caused by American defoliating aircraft in his neutral country at that time, and I want to talk about that. A third trip took me into Laos and parts of North Vietnam. I might also say, I suppose it's pertinent to indicate that I had 5 years from 40 to 45 in the armed forces fighting the war against fascism, which we all know has not been completely won yet. I want to, as I say, talk about chemical war and go through this. I have a rather lengthy paper that I want to summarize and then show you some slides. The chemical war that the Americans have been carrying out in Vietnam and other areas in Indochina, as we'll see, is of two components. One, anti-plant warfare, herbicidal warfare, and anti-personnel gases. I'm going to say a little bit about gases, not very much, and spend considerable time with the anti-plant chemicals. These are known as herbicides because they do kill plants. They also, in lesser amounts, defoliate them. They remove the leaves. And they also damage plants, some of the agents, by drying them up. The one we use against rice, Agent Blue, is a desiccating agent. It makes the plants die. Now, the other agents are synthetic plant hormones. When we put the slides on, I'll show you the chemical formulations for them. But they are essentially called, briefly, 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T and picloram. And I want to emphasize, one should not confuse these with things like DDT, pesticides. These chemicals are to, act more or less like plant hormones. They interrupt plant metabolism and in relatively low amounts do not have too much effect on animal systems. Although it has been found, and we'll hear more about this, that Agent Orange, the one most commonly used, something like 120,000 tons of this agent has been dropped upon Vietnam in the past 7 years by the United States. This has now been found to be highly toxic to experimental animals because it causes in a wide range of animals, chicks, rats, guinea pigs, very high incidence of malformed offspring and stillborn young. Now, the levels at which this will produce these pathologies in experimental animals are such that if the Vietnamese women are as sensitive as the laboratory rat is, they can very well ingest enough of these chemicals to produce malformed infants. As you know, there have been many reports in Vietnamese papers about increasing numbers of malformed infants, and this is a possibility. It's not proved yet that we may have created a really catastrophic situation with respect to future generations because of the use of these chemicals. The Department of Defense has recognized the toxicity of this Agent Orange, which until last year was the most popular one in use, and they have, as you probably all know, banned the use of this agent for any more activity at all in Vietnam. It's one of the most irresponsible situations I think one can imagine, where for 8 years they used a thing that they finally realized was too toxic and had to be removed. Now, there have been several groups of scientists who have assessed the effects of this chemical war, anti-plant warfare, on Vietnam. Dr. Shirley of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, myself, Dr. Oriens, Dr. Westing, and very recently, the American Association for the Advancement of Science concluded a study. In fact, they got back in September of 70, and they have summarized what all of us who have been there have found, and I want to quote now their summary, rather briefly, from their official publication called Science. It was this
WBAI New York,
published in the January 8, 1971 issue. It says, as a result of the anti-plant chemicals dumped upon Vietnam, we 1/5 to 1/2 of South Vietnam's mangrove forests have been utterly destroyed, and even now, years after spraying, there is almost no sign of life. Half of the trees in the mature hardwood forests north and west of Saigon are dead, and the massive invasion of apparently worthless bamboo threatens to take over the area for decades to come. 6.2 billion board feet of merchantable timber have been destroyed at a loss to the South Vietnamese economy of $500,000 minimum. The Army's crop destruction program, which seeks to deny food to enemy soldiers, has been a near total failure because nearly all the food destroyed would actually have been consumed by civilian populations, particularly Montagnards. This AAAS team, made up of Dr. Mazelson, I should find one of the country's leading biologists, concluded or found evidence of shocking deficiencies in the precautions taken by the U.S. military authorities to protect civilian populations from needless attack under the Army's crop destruction program. About 500,000 acres of arable land, good cultivatable land, have been sprayed according to the Army's figures. The actual figure is probably much more. This amounts to enough food, Mazelson and his group calculated, that on the basis of that many acres having been destroyed, food to feed 600,000 persons for 1 year was destroyed. Now, this is concrete proof that that the main purpose of this was not to deny food to NLF soldiers, but to deny it to civilian populations in areas that we did not control. Most of this spraying has been in the food-scarce Central Highlands, which is principally inhabited by Montagnards. This AAAS team this summer was flown over an area in Quang Nai. I'll show you one of their slides that they have lent me. Quang Nai province, where crop destruction operations had been conducted only a few days previously. They were accompanied by the chemical operations officer, a colonel, who had planned the operation, and he assured them that the fields destroyed were growing food for the NLF. The reasons given for his assessment were found by this official team to be all false. Although the officer said there were no dwellings below and none could be seen from the air, aerial photographs taken by the AAAS and a map in 1965 indicated more than 900 dwellings in the area, suggesting that that targeted area had housed about or was inhabited by some 5,000, mostly civilian people. The boundaries of the field seen in the photographs compared with the ones in 1965 indicating no crop, major crop expansion. The AAAS team concluded the land cultivation was just about enough to support the people apparently living there. They said our observations lead us to believe that precautions to avoid destroying crops of indigenous civilian populations have been a failure. Nearly all the food destroyed would actually have been consumed by such populations. Now, I want to ask the question, does the use of these anti-plant chemicals violate the terms of the Geneva Protocol of 1925? This, as you know, outlaws chemical and biological warfare. The Nixon administration maintains that the use of anti-plant chemicals does not. However, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution last year making clear that those countries which voted for it viewed the Geneva Protocol as prohibiting herbicides in war. The resolution declares that the use of any chemical agents of warfare which might be employed because of their direct toxic effects on animals, man, or plants is prohibited by the generally recognized rule of international law. The vote was 80-3 to ban anti-plant chemicals. Only Australia and Portugal joined the United States in opposing this resolution. Crop destruction involves violating more than the Geneva Protocol of 1925. It involves violation of two other rules of international law. They are both embodied in treaties which the U.S. has ratified. As you know, we have not ratified the Geneva Protocol, so we are theoretically not violating a law there. The first rule is from a 1907 Hague Convention. It prohibits employing poisons or poisonous weapons in war. The U.S. official Army Field Manual on the Law of Warfare, which we've just heard referred to, clearly implies that this 1907 rule bans the use of defoliants to kill crops intended to feed civilian non-combatants, whether enemy or not. One of the crimes against humanity of which the German leader Göring was convicted was the denial of food, the removal of food from occupied territory to supply German needs. And if this resulted in starvation, he was charged with, this was one of the crimes with which he was charged. The U.S. also supported the prosecution of Japanese military officials for the destruction of crop-growing lands in China. In 1949, the Geneva Convention, relative to the protection of civilian persons in time of war, forbids occupying powers from destroying enemy farmlands except in the event of absolute military necessity. So we have the Hague Convention and the 1949 Geneva Convention, which specifically rule out poisoning food for civilians. According to Professor George Byrne, who spoke 3 weeks ago at the AAAS convention in Chicago, a professor of law at the University of Wisconsin and formerly general counsel of the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, he concluded that American spraying of Vietnamese civilian food crops with herbicides is totally inconsistent with the rules of international law. In addition to spraying anti-plant chemicals in Vietnam, the United States has sprayed the Neutral Kingdom of Cambodia in April and May of 69, exactly 1 year before Nixon openly invaded the country. As I said, I had the honor with Dr. Westing of Wyndham College in Putney, Vermont, to be the guests of the royal government, who took us on a 10-day tour all through the defoliated areas. I'll show you some photographs in a moment. About 180,000 acres of eastern Cambodia, what is called the fish hook, were sprayed by an agency of the United States government, the name of which we cannot find. The U.S. government is negotiating to pay something like $12 million damage for this violation of Cambodian neutrality. But when one asks, I've asked Senator Mansfield, Senator McIntyre of the Armed Services Committee, they cannot find what agency of the government mounted this massive attack. It's a rather bizarre phenomenon that the files got lost or something. As a result of this attack, which most Americans knew probably don't know even happened, one-third of the rubber trees in production in Cambodia were damaged. It very severely knocked out Cambodia's principal source of foreign exchange, rubber. In the area actually hit, rubber production fell 35% to 45%. Damages to crops other than rubber was estimated by the Cambodian government to approximate $1.2 million. The area that was hit was inhabited by about 30,000 people, and their crops of pineapple, guava, jackfruit, and papaya were simply destroyed. Approximately 45,000 jackfruit trees were killed. I think you know that the jackfruit tree is one of the principal sources of food for many of peasants of Indochina. Now, in addition to anti-plant chemicals, we are, of course, using anti-personnel gases. The only ones that I know much about are CS, DM, and CN. CS is a fast-acting tear gas. As you know, we have CS2 now, which is very persistent. It is spread as small siliconized pellets and will last for many, many weeks. DM is a vomiting agent. CS and CN are so-called tear gases. Now, the United States has maintained that since these agents are in routine civilian use, they're just anti-personnel weapons, they do not constitute gas war. They are not lethal. However, I want to categorically state that there is conclusive proof that atomside, DM gas, has killed people, civilians, and I want to read the letter. In 1967, I received a letter from Dr. Algie Venemer, the medical director of the Canadian Aid Mission to Vietnam. And he directed the TB hospital at Quang Nai. Dr. Venema wrote me as follows. During the last 3 years, I have examined and treated a number of patients, men, women, and children, who have been exposed to a type of war gas, the name of which I do not know. The type of gas used makes one quite sick when one touches the patient or inhales the breath from their lungs. I've had a little flu in my throat. Talks out. The patient usually gives a history of having been hiding in a cave or tunnel or bunker into which a canister of gas was thrown in order to force them to leave their hiding place. These patients that have come to my attention were very ill with signs and symptoms of gas poisoning, similar to those that I've seen in veterans from the First World War treated at Queen Mary Hospital in Montreal. The mortality rate of adults is about 10%, while the mortality rate in children is about 90%. This is from a respected member of the Canadian medical profession, whom I have met, and he has attested to the veracity of this letter. It seems clear to me that in using herbicides and anti-personnel gases, the U.S. is violating several international rules of law, some of which have been ratified by the U.S. government. I want to conclude by briefly mentioning another very serious violation which concerned conventional weapons, the results of which I personally witnessed and photographed in Cambodia. This was about 200 miles north of where the defoliation occurred. It was an attack upon a Cambodian anti-aircraft position in late November 1969, in which 25 Cambodian soldiers were killed by 500-pound bombs dropped by F-100 fighter planes. It was the post at Dak Dam, which is right across from the Special Forces camp at Bu Prang. I don't know if we have any people who know where that was. That is up in the Central Highlands. Now, the reason for the attack was that the Cambodians had defended their airspace by shooting an American observation plane, shooting it down, that had been flying over them. In response, the United States Air Force attacked this position, killed these Cambodian soldiers, attacked the hospital. I'll show you the destroyed well-marked hospital, and also attacked an ambulance. The United States government, on February 20th, 1970, issued a statement in which it apologized for this. The U.S. government expresses profound regrets and condolences and requests the Royal Cambodian government facilitate the payment of the equivalent of $400 to the next of kin of each 25 persons killed. I don't know how you assess the life of a Cambodian at $400 per person. I'm quoting the State Department now. In addition, the U.S. expresses its special regret and apologies for the attack upon an ambulance, the character of which the pilots concerned inadvertently failed to distinguish. I saw photographs of this ambulance. It was a white vehicle, well marked with Red Cross. This incident was investigated by the International Control Commission. I talked with the Indian the chief of that commission. He verified what the Cambodians told us and what we saw. This was sold in the United States as an attack upon a North Vietnamese army artillery position inside Cambodia. This was the justification given for this attack. This was a complete lie. I can verify this. The only places that were attacked were well-marked Cambodian installations. There were no North Vietnamese anywhere in the area. I'd like to conclude this short presentation, then we'll switch to the pictures. It should be recalled President Nixon in his May 1st speech announcing the invasion of Cambodia stated that the U.S. had always scrupulously respected the neutrality of Cambodia, and it was the North Vietnamese who were violating the territorial integrity of that kingdom. The attack upon Dak Dam, with the destruction and killing of 25 Cambodian soldiers, and the defoliation attack that I have just described and I will show you pictures of, show, I think, how far from the truth the President of the United States can stray. So let's switch now to... Could somebody get the lights and we'll run through these pictures so you can see I wasn't making these things up. Now, we've got to get that off too if we could. This is just a slide of the types of chemicals. Just show I really am a scientist. I could go in there. There are dichlorophenoxyacetic acids, if that interests you. Next slide. Now, the next slide simply shows how it's escalated. It only takes it up to about 68. I want to say that my friend Art Westing, who just came back, has calculated that about 12% of the total land surface has been sprayed with these chemicals. Something like 50% of the hardwood forests of Vietnam have been hit, a very high percentage of them having been killed, the merchantable timber. This is not a Tarzan-type useless jungle. The timber industry is a very important part of the economy of Vietnam. Next picture. Now, this slide shows the way in which the spraying has been done. These are C-123 aircraft. They carry 1,000 gallons in their fuselage of the defoliant. The raid that we went on was a heavy suppression mission. We were accompanied by F-100 fighter bombers dropping CBUs because we have to get down just above treetop and fly quite slowly, about 130 knots. And then this is a flight at a rate of about 27 pounds per acre. The maximum in my home state is 2 pounds per acre. So you can see there's quite a difference in the amount of stuff we put out over there. Next picture. I think the next one is, these are some slides given to me by David Baum. It shows you again C-123s. Now, the interesting thing, the Vietnamese markings are on this one, but I'm told by Dave that this is flown by American pilots with Vietnamese markings on the aircraft, so the U.S. government can say, of course, it's the Vietnamese doing it, not us. Next picture.